This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Okay.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It is Steph here. Hello, good evening.
Hello there, Steph. It's Jim here. And it's just you and me in the studio tonight,
just
Steph.
Just you and me.
And we have...
The biggest troublemakers, really. Let's be honest.
We are. Well, anyway, here we are. And we do have a show, though.
We do have a show. And we're going back to a bit of an old school style show. Back at the beginning when we started doing Is Nothing Sacred, we started having lots of different topics covered each week. And then we moved to a bit of a new system of having one topic per week. But tonight we've got two things that are not in the slightest bit related at all, not even a little bit.
Well, they could in fact be related because we are going to be talking to our regular guest, but online tonight, Dr. Clovis Palmer from the Burnet Institute. We're going to call him in just a minute.
Yes, indeed.
And we're also going to be talking with Monica Dux, who was here for the Writers' Festival, about motherhood, I believe.
Yes.
Well, there is a connection between motherhood and HIV because it wasn't that
Bodies?
Long ago. It wasn't that long ago when women who with HIV couldn't have children, and now they can.
Oh, that's good. There you go.
So we can actually talk about that.
Maybe we can ask Clovis about that too.
And we can talk about all the myths about motherhood too. Actually, I prefer that we talk about the myths about parenthood because being a parent myself and being inundated with my children this week, as I have been, mind you, they're in their late 30s and 40s, so I can hardly complain about being inundated, but I was inundated also by my granddaughter who was here, and that was fabulous fun. So I'll be able to rabbit on like a mother there.
Well, if you have any questions for our regular HIV expert, Clovis Palmer, you can SMS on 0427JOY949. That's 0427569949. Or email onair@joy.org.au. Or if you want to tell us anything about your children, anything about parenthood, anything about...
A funny story about
mumshood
would be good.
Or if you have any other ideas about the relationship between the two topics tonight.
Or between your parent and you. That would be interesting.
That would be very interesting. So that's 0427JOY949.
And we do need to say thank you very much to Leo and Brian from the Sound Museum and to Emma and friends from Her Story for the shows that have preceded us tonight.
Excellent, as always. I should apologise. I'm recovering from tonsillitis, so you might hear some...
Not only is she recovering from tonsillitis, she's recovering from New Zealand, where she spent a few days this week the second time in a month.
Which was very, very beautiful place. But on a, again, completely unrelated topic, today is...
The 70th birthday of the seminal Irish rock and roll star Van Morrison, who began life, if I remember correctly, because I can almost remember this, in a group called Them, and they had a very big hit song out called Gloria, which we're not going to play.
We are going to play
a song for Van Morrison, though.
Yes, it was one of my favourites as a teenager, the beginning of my, one of my emo phases, sort of.
White makeup and black eyeliner?
I wasn't very good at makeup. Really my thing. No, I would kind of get it everywhere. I'd look horrible. Anyway. We digress.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim and you're here with Steph and me on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's 11 minutes past 10. And tonight we are going to talk to Clovis Palmer, our regular HIV guest from the Burnet Institute, about gut health. Are you there, Clovis?
Yes, I am.
So this week, I believe, there was an important seminar at the Burnet, which was addressed by Professor Alan Landy from the Rush Medical Center in Chicago, where he talked about the importance of having healthy gut flora and fauna for HIV medications. And we've had a topic on this, or a talk on this, a while back on here where we got sidetracked into things like the poo capsule and all that sort of stuff. Yep. But really, I mean, can you give us a bit of a rundown about what Alan talked about? Because we are going to get him on the show later, not today, but on another show.
Yeah. So he pretty much touched on what has been known for a while, that if you give HIV-infected persons good probiotics, it sort of reduces the effect of the disease. So it slows the disease progression. So,
and does it do that by slowing down the inflammation in the gut?
Yes. So there have been a lot of studies in Africa where, in the absence of antiretroviral therapy, they gave these women who are not on therapy probiotics, so the yogurts, and what they found is that it actually suppressed or reduced the progression of disease. So it has been long been shown of the importance of probiotics. But what recent studies have been showing now is that when you give persons who are on antiretroviral therapy the correct probiotic combination, they also improve their immune response and health as well.
But, you know, if we've known that for a while, why isn't that common knowledge amongst people living with HIV? And why aren't our doctors saying to us, go to the chemist, go to the supermarket, buy this sort of yogurt or that sort of yogurt? If I go into the supermarket or a chemist, there's a baffling array of probiotics in there.
Yep.
And they all claim that they're special and unique. And so, you know, there are brand name ones which people will recognise. Brand name spoiler coming up, everybody. I'm going to say Yakult. There's Yakult. Mm-hmm. And, yep. then, you know, like each of the supermarkets has its own house brand of a Yakult type drink. Then there, if you go to the health foods aisle, you'll find all these probiotic capsules, some of which are now advertising. You don't need to keep them in the fridge; you can just keep them in a bottle with your other medications.
Yep. So you've
got all the yogurts, and you know some of them actually say this yogurt will give you is really good for your gut health. They'll actually make the health claim, which I didn't think was actually allowable on foods that are on the shelves.
Yep.
So which one?
Yeah, I guess one of the problems, so what these studies have shown is that there's a significant dysregulation in sort of dysbiosis in the gut. So the good bacteria disappear while the bad bacteria appear. And what that does is that it sort of changes the way how we sort of use or take in nutrients. So, for example, we need the good bacteria to break down food and fatty acid into, you know, good antibacterial and good anti-inflammatory fatty acids. So if those are absent, then you have this inflammation in the gut, and this creates sort of an inflammatory storm. The issue with the sort of probiotics and the yogurt is that it's very difficult to control what you put in them. So you have different bacterial species, and they have different properties and uses.
So does it sound like the poo capsule might be coming back to favour then?
No, I think, again, there are a lot of studies, good scientific studies have shown that specific bacteria have very important anti-inflammatory effects in humans. So for example, Lactobacillus rhamnosus. So that is a bacteria that when I'm looking for yogurt or probiotics, I look for that name. If I don't see that name on the bottle or...
So spell that out for us.
So it's Lactobacillus, Lactobacillus, rhamnosus, rhamnosus. And one of my favorite yogurt, again, I'm not promoting anybody's yogurt, but... I like Chobani, and that's one of the few yogurt that contain this bacteria. Mm. So it's a very good...
It's a good hipster yogurt. It's all over the supermarkets of... of Brunswick and Coburg.
Speaking of things that people buy, we do need to go to some messages, but please stay on the line, Clovis. We will be back very shortly. You are on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim. I'm here with Steph. We are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's 19 minutes past 10 and it is outside at the moment 11 degrees. That's about the maximum for the day, I reckon.
Yeah, it's too cold. It's spring though. It's spring starts in
tomorrow.
1 hour and 40 minutes or less if you're listening to this as overnight. It'll be spring already. Lucky
that
you.
That is true.
Lucky you. But now we are talking to Dr. Clovis Palmer, our resident HIV specialist.
He's on the line. You're there, Clovis?
Yes, I am, Jim.
Good.
So we've been talking about gut health and HIV. We've been talking about probiotics, yogurts, how to navigate what's good and bad.
So how do you prevent inflammation in the gut? What shouldn't we be eating, Clovis, if for those of us that are HIV positive?
So again, one of the things that Professor Alan Lande stressed is the importance of good nutrition, so fruits, vegetables, but in the absence of that, then we have to supplement our diet with the proper probiotics or yogurt. So if we can maintain a good amount of fruits in our diet, then that should be sufficient.
But isn't there an unintended consequence of eating too much fruit, and that's that you get too much fructose and sugar, which means you get bad gut health?
No, but you're going to eat a sufficient amount. You're not going to eat all, you know, sweets.
I've seen you eat a pineapple.
Sugar is important. Sugar is good for health. I mean, if you eat excess, that's where the problem comes in. So you just have to make sure that you eat enough vegetables, roughage, and you will have a healthy gut system. It's also important, especially for HIV-infected persons, that they reduce alcohol intake. So HIV-infected persons and those who are overweight, they already have sort of a leaky gut. So if you imagine having, you know, too much alcohol, which again can create...
Which is full of sugar in itself, isn't it?
It does, but it also creates a leaky gut as well. So it affects the, you know, translocation of bad bacterial products into your bloodstream. So if you can limit the amount of alcohol you take in, then that will help to support a good, healthy gut.
So we've spoken about leaky gut last time you were on the show a couple of months ago, and we just wanted to explain that it's not an external leaking, it's a leaking inside the body with the transmission of the molecules. Yes.
Yes. So
you don't have to worry about things leaking out anywhere else.
No, not at all.
Yeah, there's no need for a sanitary pad.
No.
So you can imagine you eating, you know, your pineapple or your protein, and then that nutrient goes into your, you know, through your intestine into your blood circulation. So it's the same thing with the leaky gut. You have bacterial products leaking into your system. So instead of leaking nutrients alone into your bloodstream, you also have the bacterial, you know, nastiness going into your blood system. So that is what a leaky gut really is.
And so what are some of the symptoms, things like stomach bloating and...
Yeah, so bloating, inflammation, tiredness, headache, those are just some of the minor symptoms of leaky gut.
So what we should be telling our listeners, for those of them that have HIV and are on medications, whip down to the supermarket, get yourself some yogurt or some probiotics, look for the name Lactobacillus rhamnosus.
Rhamnosus, yes, Lactobacillus rhamnosus.
Rhamnosus, and then...
Yeah, or look for a good probiotic that contain that bacteria, or look for a yogurt that contain that bacteria as well. And one of them is Shobani. It's a very good yogurt.
Right. And then get into the fruit and vegetable section of your supermarket or your fruit and vegetable independent shop.
Yes, eat as much fruit and vegetables as possible. Get those.
And start snacking on those instead of chocolate.
Yeah. And reduce alcohol as much as possible.
And I want to ask you another question. This is just a bit of a off-the-wall question in terms of what we've been talking about, but the next thing we're going to talk about on the show after this is some having a bit of a discussion about motherhood. There have been advances in the ability of women to have babies while they're HIV positive. So it is possible now for women to be pregnant and give birth to non-positive babies, isn't it? And if people want to do that, they should contact their doctors and have a really good talk to them about what it means.
Yes. So I guess it's the norm nowadays that if you are infected, you can have a baby who become uninfected. So of course you have to be on antiretroviral therapy. You have to have
an undetectable
viral load.
Yep.
And you have to be on the correct medication. So it's always best to, you know, consult your physician if you plan to have enough family.
And there are quite a few women who are HIV positive in Victoria with families, which is really good to see. And
HIV really doesn't stop anyone from having a good, healthy family.
And a good, healthy life.
And a good, healthy life.
So I think we might actually talk to you again sometime about this and get some really more in detail information about diet and so on. So next time you come on, you might want to think about how we're going to do that.
Yep, that would be great. I have some tips that I got from the last conference in Croy about women's health and HIV, so I'm happy to share that.
That would be very good.
Thank you so much for talking to us tonight, Clovis.
Right, my pleasure. And I'm sorry I'm not there, but I will see you guys.
You're still here with us. You're in our ears. That's all that matters.
I'm not in person.
And we'll talk to you again next month as our regular expert.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we're going to play a song from your new favourite soundtrack, Jim.
It is. It's the soundtrack of Holding the Man, which is a film that's come out this month, and you're either not gay if you haven't heard of it, or you've been under a rock.
Or hiking in the wilderness somewhere.
Or hiking in the wilderness or on the moon or somewhere like that.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim, and I'm here with Steph, and you're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And as you just heard, you can have your say. How can they have their say, Steph?
You can SMS us on 0427 Joy949, that's 0427 569949, or
you can go on air at joy.org.au on your email.
Or you can phone 1300 Joy949 and talk to Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Robert. And did you know, Steph, that we do a lot of podcasting?
I do know we do a lot of podcasting.
And in fact, this show is podcast.
It is podcast.
And thank you, James Rothery, who does our podcasting. And
so you can listen to the podcast in three ways. You can go to joy.org.au/podcasts and they've got the most up-to-date ones. But then if you go there on maybe a Sunday, other shows will be up before us. So it's easier to go to this Nothing Sacred page on the Joy website, or you can go on iTunes.
You can, and we're a big contributor to iTunes podcasts.
We're on iTunes.
We are on iTunes. Every week we're on iTunes. And so... And then occasionally you will hear immediately after Is Nothing Sacred, you will hear a fabulous show from Andrea, who's one of the Joy's regular presenters, and she does a lot of work around the station. And Andrea runs a show called A Little Pot of Joy. And she goes through all the, she's so dedicated, Andrea. She goes through all the shows that are on Joy that have podcasts, and she pulls out really interesting podcasts, and she talks about them, researches them, and ask questions about them, and she plays them again, and that's on at 11 o'clock on Monday nights after our show. So who knows what is coming up after 11 tonight, but it will be A Little Pot of Joy.
Any show from the station that has a podcast. So now we're changing direction a little bit. So if you've been in Melbourne for the last 2 weeks, you might have noticed that the Melbourne Writers Festival has been on.
If you've been anywhere near the Wheeler Centre or or as I was on the weekend down at Fed Square, it's so crawling with writers.
Crawling. I don't think that's what writers do. They crawl. They might.
They crawl around on their desk with a pencil and pad.
Pose or huddle. Or anyway, there's been hundreds of writers, thousands of viewers, readers.
Quite well-known writers too there have been.
Yes, there's been people come from all over Australia, all over the world.
And you, Steph, have you been mingling with them,
mingling,
I believe?
Yes.
And talking to them.
I have indeed, yes. Other than being put off by tonsillitis, as you can hear, with like croaky, croaky, croak. Yes, I did go to see a show last week at the Wheeler Centre, which
groupied?
Was excellent. Groupied. And I also spoke to one of the writers in this very studio, or was actually the one over there, but at the station, who was Monica Dux, who presented four sessions as a host and as a panellist and as a guest. And so I spoke to her about her latest book.
And where's she from?
She's from Melbourne. She writes for The Age. She's a social commentator. Right. She's written a couple of books. I think this is her third. So this particular book that I was talking to her about is a book called Mothermorphosis, and it's an anthology of stories written by women writers from around Australia who, she explains in the interview, she thinks had a story to tell, a particularly kind of talking about some of the things that people don't always talk about with motherhood. So we had a chat a week ago, and here we have the first part of that interview.
Go online, everyone's talking about mummy issues and you can't really get away from it. I think motherhood is really fetishized today as well. There's a really big market around becoming a mother. But amidst all of that, I think really authentic stories about becoming a mother and truth-telling about becoming a mother is something that doesn't happen enough. You do get a lot of short little exposés online, like what really happened to my body after I had a baby, or, you know, I didn't cope with being a new mother. You hear a lot of those kind of stories, but you don't really hear beyond that. I think it's often there's very short takes on something. And so to actually have women talk about the experience of becoming a mother in all its variety is not really given the space. And I think it's something we often do. We do tend to think, oh, mothers, you know, we put that in the corner. We don't really listen to women a lot. And so the motivation for this book really came out of that sense that there's this epic tale. I mean, making a baby is epic. Like, it is profoundly, profoundly fundamental. We all came from, you know, a womb. And it is an extremely transformative experience. And women experience that transformation in many different ways, many, many different ways. But the one thing I think that unites all motherhood is something big happened. This collection really was an attempt to have a whole lot of women come together who could write and who I thought had a story to tell, to talk about that experience and not to talk about it in a cliched way and not to talk about it in a kind of grab, you know, quick story way, but to actually say, look, this is what happened to me. And, yeah, I actually asked all the writers, I said, your brief is tell me what it was like to become a mother.
And that issue about, I guess, talking about in a cliched way comes up a lot as well. There's a lot of women in the book who talk about knowing or trying to suss out what the expectations mm-hmm. are of how they're meant to talk about having a baby or being a mother and then trying to fit with that. Why do you think it is that women aren't encouraged to tell the truth about motherhood?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think today, more than any other time, it's become harder to, you know, ironically, it's become harder to tell the truth about motherhood when we're awash with a whole lot of motherhood stories, because there's very powerful scripts at play. And some of these are very much about marketing, you know, buy this product. Some of them are about, I think, you know, keeping women quiet, that we as a society like to pretend that women are all equal now and that we live in this wonderful world. But in essence, care work is profoundly undervalued in society, and not just for mothers. You know, any kind of care work that's performed, which is usually performed by women, is not seen as real work. It serves the patriarchy that we are not really taking the harder side of motherhood seriously, or even the joyous side in some ways. I think there is a bigger story too, though, that the mother in history is this profoundly symbolic figure. You know, we have the Virgin Mary, and, you know, how can you top the Virgin Mary? So I, when you become a mother, I think the weight of that expectation and the weight of those stereotypes and the weight of our own expectations, we all had mothers and a problematic relationship with your mother or a wonderful relationship, and all of that cultural baggage kind of meets the moment that baby is there. And yeah, and I think that's a lot to navigate, and I think it's very hard. I mean, I think one of the big things that came out in Mothermorphosis for me was how many women talk about motherhood as a performance. And I felt that myself. I know when I had a baby, I felt like I had to perform something. I know when I was pregnant, I felt the same. I had to perform happy pregnancy. And yeah, it's a very hard one. It's a very hard one to navigate.
So I guess, we've got competing trends in what's happening out in the world. So on one hand, we've got feminism and a lot of women identifying as feminists and women's rights improving in some ways. On the other hand, we have increased advertising and social media culture where our public life is curated. With all those kinds of things competing, do you think it's getting easier for women to tell the truth, or is it getting even harder?
I think it's a bit of both. I think in one way, we do have more outlets. We can talk more. I think it is much easier today to find a community, which is really important. Not for everyone. Not everyone has access to that community or those communities. But I think it is much easier to make connections. I think there is much more awareness today in some quarters about how difficult it is sometimes when you become a mother, and that women need more support. So we kind of know that. In another way, though, I think it is harder, because I think the experience of becoming a mother itself is really hard. It's labor. Like it is actually really hard labor. It's a really challenging experience. When you add to the fact this sense that we are meant to be equal and we are meant to have access to the world, having a baby challenges that completely. Yeah, and we like to pretend to keep society working. We like to pretend that it's easy, because if you really look at how much labor goes into caring for children, it's hard, and it's intense. And so I think all those kind of competing pressures, what rises to the top generally is what's easiest. And what's easiest is just to pretend that there's not all these stories, and pretend that women don't struggle. Or they don't. And saying this too, I mean, in the book we have stories of joy. Like, I even think talking about joy today has become so problematic, because there's a lot of women who, for instance, find birth very traumatic and have very traumatic experiences in birth, and we don't really talk as much about that in the way that we should. At the same time, if you have a really good birth experience, talking about that is in some way insulting all the women who had a bad birth experience. And yeah, it's you know, there's so many contradictions that go into it. And so I think it's difficult.
One thing that I thought was interesting, in most of the stories, the partner was either not mentioned or was quite absent. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm curious about how readers have responded to that, and whether you've heard anything about men finding that confronting.
It is interesting that, you know, of course, men aren't always partners, but there has been a lot of talk of, oh, we need a fathermorphosis. And I think, yeah, you do, but that's not my department. Good on them. I really wanted to bring it back to the woman and to women to talk from themselves. And my own experience with having my children was very much, I found it very physical, and I found it was a really visceral, you know, onslaught being pregnant. And it did something to me as a woman. And I think that it just does to women. It is, we carry the baggage of cultural expectations, and we carry the physical baggage most of the time. So all that stuff that comes into play, I think it is very different. And so, yeah, there is an absence of men in that. And yeah, I think that's kind of appropriate. Yeah.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim. I'm here in the studio with Steph. Hello, Steph.
Hello, hello.
And we had just been listening to a very interesting interview that you did with Monica Dux, who's a Melbourne-based writer who's written a book called
Mothermorphosis,
which is about women's experiences of motherhood.
And the transformation.
So,
but not, you know, in a mushy way.
No,
it's in a like...
Like the commercialisation of motherhood. So it's almost like an extension of a discussion about the commercialisation of women's bodies. I mean, there's a big industry around motherhood, isn't there? You know, like, what pram should you get? What clothes should you wear?
Thousands of dollars.
Yes.
And then there's all that weirdo gendering, which is the next question I ask her about, you know, because I'm now of the age when my friends are having babies, and one thing that never fails to drive me bonkers is when you go into a shop and all the baby clothes are either pink for boys or blue for girls, or they have something that's super duper gendered, like flowers or trucks. And it's like, excuse me, I would like some dinosaur onesies for my godchild. Thank you. And they just don't exist. Or there's one option. Anyway, that's my rant.
Get online and buy them from India. When my children were little, my sister was living in India and she sent back all these Indian baby clothes. They were black with gold sequins on
them. Oh, that's cool.
And they were really cool. And everybody used to go, oh, where did you get those? Oh, I'd love those, you know. And it was my daughter, so she was a girl. Excuse me. You see, it's making me sneeze just thinking about parenthood. But it is very gendered and very commercialised these days. Probably more so than it's ever been.
Yeah, and it's something that, again, being a woman of childbearing age, makes me kind of a bit uncomfortable. Like as a queer woman, where I see all these things, it's not just about being gay or straight. It's about being this kind of very, what I think, like narrow representation of what it means to be a male. So, yeah, that's one of the good things about this book, that it shows that there's not just one thing. And so that's, yeah, part of the next question that I'm going to ask. So here is the next part of the interview with Monica Dux. You are on Joy 94.9.
Once again, it's that thing, isn't it, that we must, I think women are always apologising for their stories. And,
oh, yeah, I guess I'm also meant in the sense of, you know, in some of those stories, it seemed like there was a bit of a call to action. Mm. One that I was reading yesterday where the woman saying, you know, every time my husband changes a nappy or makes dinner, that everyone expects that he deserves a gold medal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so unfair. Like, I wonder whether, that's one of the things that we were, well, what's the question? I suppose the question is, what next? So now that these stories are out there and have been told, and these things have been said that aren't necessarily said often, what does that mean for us and what should we be then working towards?
Well, I think that, I mean, the way society is structured today, that it's a better deal for a man. I mean, men are meant to be more involved in child rearing of their children, and good on them. And some of them are. I mean, I have a really fantastic partner who he's actually much more of a parent in some ways than I am. But I feel like I had to really struggle to create that situation. You have to, I think there's a lot of education that needs to go on, because I think we all follow these scripts and we all fall into these. And I think a lot of women fall into these. It's much easier to do the work if the man's been basically socialised not to do the work. And also if, you know, it's the old cliche of how many times men are, you know, babysitting their own kids. But so I think that dynamic is quite powerful. I've really felt like with Mothermorphosis that it's a book that men would want to read as well. And the book I did before this, which was a pregnancy memoir, I really wrote it thinking I didn't want to market this just to women. Because going back to that idea that motherhood stories are epic, they're everyone's stories. And mothers are part of society and our experiences have a huge impact on everyone else, but we like to pretend that they don't. And I think that's a lot of what goes wrong when there's a male partner who compartmentalizes that experience away from, you know, the woman, that we can keep everything separate, these separate spheres, and we basically put women in a corner. So, yeah, I think there's a lot that men have to learn. I think men gain so much when they're a part of their kids' lives, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Yeah.
I was also wondering, you know, having been involved as a feminist and talking to a lot of women, is there anything in this book that surprised you? Is there anything that you read and thought, oh my gosh, I've never thought of that before?
Yeah, there were actually. I mean, I think it's difficult with motherhood that we all do it a certain way and a lot of judgment comes into being a mother, and that's understandable. I'm kind of a bit of a defender of judgment, because I think it's really hard to say to women, you shouldn't judge others' choices, when we are set up pretty much to judge other women's choices. We're told that a lot of the choices we make today are so crucial. You know, our society is very focused on risk and all of that. So the decision, say, whether if you can't breastfeed and you don't want to keep breastfeeding, you are made to feel dreadful for that kind of thing. And there's so many different ways that that happens. And so I think, you know, I mean, I wanted the book to be women's experiences without judgment, that they were laid out. And I think what came, there's a couple of stories in there, one in particular which I found quite harrowing, which is a beautiful essay from George McEncroe, who wrote about Nellie dying after she gave birth to her first daughter. And it's really a hard read. It's fantastic, but it's a really hard read. And it's about you know, birth going wrong. Then that was followed up with Lorelei Vashti, who is a young Melbourne writer, and she wrote this beautiful piece about having a home birth and actually not being able to celebrate that and feeling like she couldn't say to people, I had a good birth. And, you know, so there's many different shades. We're looking at many different sides of this, but I think it's what's nice is they all sit there and they're not talking to each other. I think that's what I really liked about this collection is that a lot of the essays, they were very confident and they didn't feel like they were second-guessing everyone else. They spoke truthfully and generously, and I think there was an awareness. I think these women, you know, in the collection are very smart women who have written very generous pieces without that sense of, oh, you did it differently or this happened to me, therefore your experience is not important. There was also, I mean, there's a couple of stories in there of babies who died, and you cannot ever but be really shocked and overwhelmed by those stories. So I found editing those was wonderful. I'm really glad we got them on the page. But they still surprise me. You read them and you think, oh, my God, there are these worlds that people live that we are often quite blind to.
Yeah. And I guess for myself, as someone who's not yet a mother, I found it equally terrifying and reassuring, which, yeah. I suppose is part of the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, yeah, the stories are quite courageous, but also, as you say, that why does it have to be courageous to tell the truth? Like, that's also maybe a bit disappointing.
Well, because I think people don't want to listen. I mean, I think often, and when we talk about loss of pregnancies and loss of babies, I think we don't want to listen because people don't want to listen about grief at the best of times, and people don't want to hear about something. I think losing a pregnancy can feel quite inexplicable, and it's a very specific kind of grief. And I think as a society, we don't really want to hear those stories. And so I think a lot of, and even on a lesser level, we don't really want to hear stories of people's discomfort and that it can be hard to hear and it can be very confronting. I found some of the stories quite unexpected, even though I knew what the women were going to write about. When I read them, I thought, oh, yeah, I don't really always listen to those stories. And I think it is important that we pause and engage with them.
I guess, so Joy is an LGBTI radio station, and I guess from an LGBTI perspective, one thing that I find hard with seeing a lot of the media and the advertising around mothers and babies, and I find it very gendered, where you have this woman with flowing hair and pearl earrings holding either a boy baby in blue or a girl baby in pink. And I guess I'm curious, from your experience now in this area, is this something that a lot of women face, that they see these images and go, oh God, that's not me at all? Or is it something where the LGBTI community is kind of still a bit more on the outer?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there was two things I would say to that. I think in general that people, I mean, I know I did, I found the whole gendering stuff, both of my children and of me as a mother, really confronting and awful. I have a boy and a girl, and both experiences of having them was so different. And with the girl, I was full of fury because I couldn't seem to have her as a child. It was always that she was pretty. You know, you couldn't. From 2 days old, you know what newborns look like. They're like aliens. Yeah. And everyone's going, oh, she's so beautiful and pretty. She's pretty. And I'm like, she's not pretty.
She looks like a cute baby.
Yeah, she may be pretty one day and good on her. But you don't, I mean, I think that gendering process is really strong. And the kind of, I don't know what you'd say, heterosexualizing of them. And that is really offensive. I actually, with my kids too, and he'll be chasing the girl. You get that from all your old uncles and stuff, but you get that from everyone. I think there's still a lot of discussion that is very much about their roles. From a very old age, you get it from their gender and you get, you know, and kind of assumptions about their sexuality and stuff, and you're like, they're blobs. Like, these are blobs. They have no personality yet. I don't know what this person is. And so I think I found that hard, and I think that just happens lazily. I think a lot of people just go to those stereotypes. I also think in terms of parenting that this image of the man and the woman and is not in any way really representative of the so many different ways that people parent. And I think that has to change. I think that's actually, and I see it now with my kids at school. Like, you know, I'm really trying to impress on them what a family is and how a family works. And I think it is very important because of kids. Because I think I don't want my kids to feel that families are a certain way when they're not, because there are so many kids who feel excluded from kindy up. And you just, so I think they are very important issues, and I think it's something that we really need to work hard at unpicking a bit more, because some of it I think is just laziness. people just go with the stereotypes. And, you know, the way we're advertised too, it's always, yeah. So, yeah, I think that is an issue, big issue.
One last question. So now that you've written this book and some conversations have come out of that, what is the next public conversation you want to see about women and motherhood?
Oh, there's so many. There are so many. I think we need more public conversations about women. I think we need conversations about families. I think we need conversations about, yeah, I mean, I think motherhood is an epicenter of so many other issues. I mean, and one which has come up in all my work is this, what happens to women who have been caregivers when they hit their 60s and 70s? You know, there's the financial stuff that comes into play in being a caregiver, the emotional stuff. There's so much, you know, and it is, I think motherhood is a, you can lead into so many things about society, how we function as a society, what we value in terms of the way we care for each other, the way we care for children, how we feel as a community. So, yeah, I think it's a conversation that has so many layers. And I was very aware when this book was put together that it was one thing we were asking, and this is in no way speaking in a universal way. And I think we need to get away from being universal. But I think there's tremendous and, you know, infinite a number of issues. Motherhood is about society. How do we see ourselves as a society? So, yeah.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Great interview then, Steph. You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And that was an interview that Steph did this week with Monica Dux, who is a writer in Melbourne, talking about motherhood and what it means and how it's been interpreted culturally these days, and some of the trials, tribulations, trips and traps for women who decide to be mothers.
Trips and traps, that's good.
That's good, isn't it? Very onomatopoeic, in fact. And so we've been tonight we talked to Clovis Palmer again about gut health. Well, I suppose having babies is about gut health, isn't it, really, when you think about it? It's the ultimate in gut health for the human race. Is to get pregnant and to produce another human being.
Is that
being.
Your guts? I don't know if that's your guts. I think it's another
bit. It's down
bit.
Near there.
It's down near there.
It's next door. Jim, with a bit of gut leakage.
I think stick to community health. Maybe don't become a physiologist. It's close enough. Oh, you need to have your appendix out. Well, why have you removed my large intestine?
well, probably a good thing. But so, anyway, that was a very interesting interview, I thought. I think that it would be good to get Monica back in the studio so we could really grill her on some hard questions.
So thanks, as always, to our regular expert, Clovis Palmer. Thank you to Monica Dux for speaking with me the other week. And we're going to go to a song also from the Holding the Man soundtrack, which is the soundtrack of the show, the film that's just come out, from the book, which everyone is raving about.
Everyone has read the book.
Except me.
According to the publicists, it's the quintessential Australian love story. I'm not sure that it is, but it's a bloody good read and a very, very good book. And the film is actually very interesting. I wouldn't call it the best film I've ever seen, but it is certainly a very interesting film and a very moving film. And you do need to take a box of tissues.
So, bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.